Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you this Monday, September 30th. Great week on Faith and Family. We're going to talk about family life from a different perspective. We're going to talk with some of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionary families who serve in international missions. So looking forward to talking with them about that. If you'd like to join the conversation today, you could do so. You can give us a call at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or you can send your emails to family@kfuo.org. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the program and giving you the opportunity to hear about these missionary families. So thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin. Just go to our website, kfuo.org, go to the sponsor section and click on this UW logo. That'll take you to their website. You can find out all about the great programs and opportunities they have at Concordia University, Wisconsin. It is time to get into our discussion and welcome our guest for today. Our guest is Reverend Peter Haugen, and his family is preparing to pack up and not just move partway around the world, but all the way to the other side of the world. So welcome, Pastor Haugen.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us this morning. So tell us a little bit about Pastor Haugen and the Haugen family and how you ended up considering preparing to serve as missionaries in Papua New Guinea.
Well, actually, I just finished at the seminary myself. I graduated from Fort Wayne, the Fort Wayne Seminary, in May of this year, and my first call was, in fact, to Papua New Guinea. We were not considering it really at all, honestly, until April 3rd, when some friends of ours who are currently deployed serving in Papua New Guinea. We were actually just sitting around having some fellowship evening with them, and they asked us if we would consider it, and if we would consider a first call to Papua New Guinea. And that was the first that we really started thinking about it at all. So
seminary and preparing for the ministry, and you're thinking a parish here in the U.S. probably.
Yes, that's right.
And someone pops the idea of going all the way around to the other side of the world to Papua New Guinea.
Yes, that's also right.
Did your family think that that was just crazy?
Actually, I was the one who thought it was crazy. my reaction was to laugh and say, "You're joking, right?" And then when they came back with, "Well, no, we're actually quite serious about this," my initial reaction was to say, "Well, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard, and no, I will not consider it." And it was my wife who came to me, and God bless her for this, but she's the one who came to me and said, you realize we can't say no. You realize we have to think about this." And it took me about a week to get to the point where I could say, "Okay, you know what, we will walk until the doors are closed." And my reaction to that at that point was, "We'll walk until the doors are closed. Please, God, close those doors." Some of that is just that it was a radical change in plans. Some of that was, for me, I have a great respect for missionaries and a great concern for foreign missions. And I had always wanted to support missions and be involved in missions as a parish pastor here in the United States, leading my, God willing, leading my flock to support foreign missions. It was my brother that was going to be a foreign missionary and my sister that was going to be a foreign missionary, not me. I was going to stay in the United States. And so some of it was that, and just kind of getting my head around that. Some of it was just my own natural reluctance and so on. And my wife was on board with it very quickly. The kids, we have four kids, and when we first mentioned it to them that, we're thinking about this, their initial reaction, well, my daughter was fine with it because one of her best friends was going to be over there, is over there now, in fact. And my son's initial reaction was, all three of them, their initial reaction was, no, we don't want to do that, until they found out active volcanoes, no tornadoes, and they might get machetes, and then they were totally on board. And they've been gung-ho about it ever since. But by the time call night rolled around on at the end of April, I could honestly say, if this does not happen, praise God. If this does happen, praise God. And I was by the end of April, I was very comfortable with this, and or as comfortably as anybody can be with this. But it took several weeks for me to get to that point. So.
Well, I think I'm as intrigued as your sons. Active volcanoes and machetes. I don't know. That sounds pretty interesting. Pretty literally exciting. That sounds pretty exciting. Looking forward to hearing about the active volcanoes and carrying a machete with you. That sounds pretty crazy. Tell us about Peter Haugen before seminary. Who was Peter Haugen before Sam?
Well, I was actually a student, and I was a graduate student working on a PhD. In the early church at that time. I have a master's already in New Testament in the early church from the University of Minnesota. And my intention was to be, my goal was to be a professor at a university or a college somewhere. At one point I'd been thinking in terms of, you know, in terms of like a Christian college or in terms of, even a seminary or a Bible school, something like that, just as an instructor, as a professor. But the more I was involved in this, the more it became a desire to be one of the few conservative Christian voices in the secular university system. And so I was seeking degrees from institutions that would be well respected and well, where my academic credentials would be worth noting in the academic sphere. But I was looking for that, and a lot of that came from my work actually with the students as an undergraduate, and then even more as a graduate, and seeing how many come out of Christian homes, out of conservative Christian homes, and through their time at the university, their entire foundation is eroded away, and they lose all sense of faith, all sense of the validity of Scripture, mm-hmm. all sense of Christ as God and man who comes to redeem, and they felt as though they were finally eyes were being opened, you know, and the professors that I was around, the other graduate students that I was around, inevitably their reaction was, yes, we've finally gotten through to another one, and this is such a good thing. And what I found was that there was a place and a need for somebody who was, you know, and who had to be very careful. I always walked that conscience line. You know, how far can I go before I've gone too far one way or the other, you know, and yet I found opportunities to be able to say things to students like, the question is not, how is what I was taught wrong? You know, mm-hmm. The question is, what does the text say? And point them to the evidence of Scripture and allow Scripture to speak, and then to those conservative students who would get in, who would feel comfortable at least coming and speaking to me, who could come privately to me then and speak to me about their own struggles and concerns, and I could point them to various resources, including God bless him, Pastor Kind at the University of Minnesota mm-hmm. at University Lutheran Chapel there, and his work was. He was such a resource to me personally, and I wasn't even Missouri Synod at the time. I actually grew up AFLC, a small conservative Lutheran church body headquartered in Minneapolis. But I grew up as an AFLC member, and even as a non-Missouri Synod member, Pastor Kind was such a resource and a help to me there. But it was my work there, and I was gearing towards a professorship. And it wasn't until we moved down to Waco, Texas, so I could pursue PhD work at Baylor University down there. It wasn't until then that we wound up joining the Missouri Synod, And we joined it in part because the Missouri Synod, I think, is a better home for us as far as, theologically there, confessionally they're a much better home for us. And so that was part of it. But part of it too was that the nearest AFLC church was 4.5 hours away and not really doable. And so we wound up joining the Missouri Synod there. And once we joined the Missouri Synod, then it became all of a sudden I had to start dealing with this question again of thinking about seminary and not really wanting to do it, but thinking about it and not being able to shake it. And that kind of started the boulder rolling down the hill, if you will, that led us into seminary.
So you had quite a training, quite an academic background before coming to the seminary. You were really on track for academia to serve as a professor.
Very much so.
How
yep,
do you
very much so?
How do you think that background will help you as serving as a missionary? I have ideas of how I think it would help, but from your perspective.
Well, actually, with this particular call, it will be enormously helpful with this particular call, because I have been called. Papua New Guinea actually has had a Missouri Synod missionary presence since 1948, and it is, in my understanding, it is the only mission of the Missouri Synod where we were the boots in on the ground. Where we were the first to go up into the bush and meet with the tribes that had never before seen a white man, to the point that one of the first two missionaries there even had a log dropped on his head, because they figured white skin meant a ghost and they wanted to see if he was in fact actually alive. Oh. And living, and so they dropped a log on his head, you know. and that was back in 1948, and since that time, you know, these first two missionaries, Burris and Hinsey, worked for 9 years before they saw a single baptism. And we're talking here, they went up into the highlands of Papua New Guinea where nobody knew that people even existed. Until gold was discovered up there, and then the mining companies found literally millions of people up there that they had no clue were there, and here then you're dealing with people who were literally a Stone Age tribe. I mean, they had never seen a metal tool, and from that to today, flying halfway around the world to come to the United States. Some of their church leaders were just here back in, mm-hmm. in July, late July in Seattle, and to come to that point in what, 60 years? They have had an enormous cultural shift and an enormous stresses put on them culturally, and so on, but then too, the church there has grown and has developed and is some 55,000 members strong now, our sister church over there, the Good News Lutheran Church. And they are, I suppose, for lack of a better term, what some would call a stage three mission, with stage one being, you know, the booth coming in on the ground, dealing with people who've never even heard of Christ, and stage two being we're sending pastors over to pastor these churches that have just been planted, you know, and then stage three being they have their own pastors. They have their own evangelists who go out into the bush still and plant new churches and things like that. They do that themselves. They have the people who are willing to do that and who are doing that, but they also do not have the resources to educate and train these people. And so what we are doing now as a synod over in Papua New Guinea primarily, and I mean there's some other work too, but primarily what we're doing right now is sending people over to teach and to train. And so Reverend Horn, who's over there right now, just deployed over, is teaching at the seminary there in the Highlands, and is training the pastors. When I go over, I've been called as a theological educator But when I go over, I will be going over to teach primarily at the Bible schools that train their evangelists who go out into the bush then, and then who also feed into the seminary pastoral candidates, and then also developing curriculum for the pastors on the field with some supplementary teaching at the seminary. But my primary purpose will be the two Bible schools and then curriculum development for the pastors already in the field. And so all of a sudden, all of this academic background, all of this training that, and it wasn't going to be worthless in the parish, obviously, either, but the parish is not an academic field, is not an academic sphere. And the academic background is enormously helpful with your study and your preparation and things like that. But you're not primarily you're engaged as a pastor, you're not engaged as a teacher. And of course, teaching is part of being a pastor, but you're a pastor first and a teacher second, if you will, or a teacher in conjunction with your pastoral responsibilities. And here, all of a sudden, then in April, I'm called as a missionary to Papua New Guinea whose call is to teach at their Bible schools, at their seminary, with the continuing education of the pastors in the field, and this academic background that I was preparing for to teach at the university level in New Testament and the early church is all of a sudden remarkably apt and beneficial, and it gives a background and a training that will be enormously helpful when I'm over there.
Seminary here in the U.S. is primarily 2 years. First and second year are spent at the seminary studying, and third year traditionally is vicarage out on the field. Yep. As an intern, and then fourth year back to the seminary if you're going the traditional route for the Master of Divinity, fourth year back at the seminary studying and kind of putting some putting into context what you've learned on vicarage. What is seminary like for the Good News Lutheran Church and Papua New Guinea? What is a seminary like? Is it a similar program? How's it structured?
It's somewhat similar. It's the training. I'm now off the top of my head, you know, this is something, like I say, that we came into relatively recently, and I'm still kind of pulling things out. Most of what I've been looking at is the Bible schools, which is a 1 year program training the evangelists who are then called to go out. The seminary, if I remember correctly, is 3 years. It's a 3 year program of study, and then they go out. I don't believe that they have the same type of internship that we have. One of the difficulties over there is, not surprisingly, the level of education. Mm-hmm. And so here, where a student coming into the seminary is required to have, typically speaking, at least in the traditional routes, is required to have an undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. Over there, the average level of education of those coming into the Bible schools to train as called church workers, as called evangelists who go out into the bush, is third grade. And the average Wow. level of education for those training to be pastors is fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking here about which is actually part of why they need, obviously, part of why they need help with the education side of things, with the training side of things, part of why they don't have the resources to do this, and part of why, then, the pastors over there are struggling a little bit with some of the movements or incursions that are starting to come into the GLC over there, that are starting to come into it and are causing problems, and these pastors know that this is wrong. Mm-hmm. But they don't have the training or the background to be able to effectively counter it, and they need assistance with that. But then it is a totally different kind of experience when you're going over there and you're training men who don't have a college degree, much mm-hmm. less don't have a high school degree in many cases.
Right, right.
Don't, you know, and it's a much lower level of education that you're dealing with over there.
What is the, speaking of education, what is the, how familiar are you with the education system in Papua New Guinea for children? And have you had a chance to visit there already and then and find out more, or are you learning primarily from the folks who are already there?
Mostly we've been learning thus far from those who are there or those who have been there. The previous missionaries, I've had a chance to meet with several of them and also with some of the leaders of the Good News Lutheran Church over there, over here in the United States. I mean, we have not yet traveled there. Our hope, our intention, God willing, is to visit there. Hopefully sometime here in the next, maybe 3 months or so. We're hoping to get over there for a week just to visit and to meet some people and to see kind of what we're, where we're going to be living, where we're going to be working, things like that. Mm-hmm. But we have not yet had a chance to do that. And so most of what I know, all of what I know right now is secondhand. The education system that I'm most familiar with over there, recognizing that it is secondhand, the education system that I'm most familiar with over there is the Lutheran school system, which is a private school system. It is considered in Papua New Guinea one of the best school system in the country, and you're talking here about many of the a disproportionately large number of, like, government officials, for example, have been trained in the Lutheran school system over there, and it's because that's the best of the educational systems over there, and so their parliament is 20-25% Lutheran, and over in the United States here, of course, it's sadly pretty rare mm-hmm. to find high level government officials that are Lutheran, or at least are confessionally Lutheran. We have a handful in Congress here.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, it's the other way around. There's a disproportionately large number who are Lutheran because those are the ones who are the best educated, and that'll vary a little bit as far as who gets in. I know now often it's the wealthier families that can afford to send their students to these schools. I don't know if that's always the case or consistently the case, or if that's the case only in the case of the international school that I'm most familiar with there, but at least in that case, many of the native students who are there are from the wealthier families who can afford to send their children there.
So over the next few months, I guess you still have it sounds like still have more opportunities to learn about the culture and all that you'll be getting into. I know you've obviously learned some, like you said, through primarily secondhand through the missionaries who've gone there or through your contact with the missionaries who are there now. And so you have quite a bit ahead of you to learn. We're going to take a break here in just a little bit. And when we come back from that break, I'm interested to hear about what your family's been doing to prepare. I know that the boys are excited about volcanoes and machetes, so and I'm dying to hear about it too. The volcanoes and machetes. Hopefully, you won't be living too close to a volcano. But I want to hear more about what you anticipate family life will be like. What you think? The things will be like for the kids, school, and things like that. And also how the kids have been preparing as well. What they're thinking and talking about when it comes to preparing to go to Papua New Guinea. So stick around. We're going to talk more with Pastor Haugen when we come back from this break, right here on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The District of Columbia is trying to protect its residents. Well, some of them anyway. The health department is advocating a 24-hour waiting period before a person can get a tattoo or piercing. They want to make sure the person's in the right frame of mind, in most cases not drunk or high on drugs. But when it comes to having an abortion with far more serious side effects, they oppose a waiting period. Tattoo parlors oppose the waiting period, citing it's bad for business. The abortion industry has the same reason for opposing a waiting period for abortion. It's bad for business, and abortion's big money. The district has one of the highest abortion rates. 41% of pregnancies end in abortion. It's time to join most states with a waiting period for abortion.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri. Visit our website, goodshepherdarnold.org.
Our mission at KFUO is to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to the nations. Today's internet capabilities give us the opportunity to do that. Listeners from all over the world can follow the ministry of KFUO via our website, Facebook, Wi-Fi radios, and smartphone apps. You can listen to KFUO Radio 24 hours a day, anywhere, with our on-demand programs and live audio streams. Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org.
On the next Focus on the Family, popular speakers Bill and Pam Farrell will guide you through newlywed issues, talking about the marriage learning curve, your first 5 years together. You'll find out what causes newlywed conflict and how to smooth out the rough patches on the next Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Weekdays at 9:30 on KFUO.
The daughter of a Louisiana pastor who was killed at a revival service Friday evening says that if her father could talk to his killer, he'd say, "I forgive you and I love you." AP correspondent Janet McConaughey says the Reverend Ronald Harris Sr.'s daughter recognized the gunman at Tabernacle of Praise Worship Center in Lake Charles.
She said that he had been a member of the church for a number of years, but had left about 4 years ago.
McConaughey says Talisha Harris described the attack.
She says the woman who had been handing out visitor packets at the front door ran in shouting, "He got a gun." She said he came down the middle aisle, shot at her father, hit a flower pot. Her father ran and was shot in the back. He fell, and the man came closer and shot him again.
The sheriff's office says Woodrow Carey, who has no known history of crime or mental troubles, called to surrender minutes after the shooting and told deputies where to find a shotgun and pistol he'd left in nearby woods. Carey is charged with second-degree murder. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you as we get into our discussion this week on missionary families. We've been talking with Pastor Peter Haugen and discussing their upcoming service in Papua New Guinea as they prepare to go serve in Papua New Guinea. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so today. Just give us a call here in the studio at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us. Just send your email to family@kfuo.org. Pastor Haugen, before we went to break, we were talking about some of the cultural nuances of Papua New Guinea, about education, and earlier on you mentioned some of the characteristics of this indigenous culture and how it's changed over the last 40 years or so, 60 years. Anything else about the culture that that you've been learning about and really trying to prepare your family for?
Well, a couple of things, actually, that, you know, this is not a Western culture that we're going into, and where we tend to be very time based, very event based, very very guilt oriented in our culture. They are not. And you know, relationship is far more important than completing a task, for example. If completion of a task on time will damage a relationship, then of course you slow things down or stop things with the task in order to preserve and strengthen the relationship. If an event is supposed to start, a church service, for example, is supposed to start at 9 o'clock, but the principal players don't arrive until 11:30. Well, then guess when the church service starts? You know, it starts at 11:30, and this sort of thing is just it takes a little bit of getting used to, as far as, you know, we're so locked into time, and it's the height of rudeness to be late. Well, that's not so much the case over there, you know, and so just little idiosyncrasies like that are going to take a little bit of getting used to for us. A part of it, too, becomes shame is significant over there, and a public shaming. If an individual is shamed publicly, that is the height of offense over there, and in a way that, I mean, it's far more profound than it would be over here, for example. It's not a passing thing. It's something that has ramifications, both in terms of relationship and in terms of, you know, in terms of how you interact with even the broader culture. It's a very clan-based societal structure over there. One of the things that we've been discovering is that Papua New Guinea is the single most linguistically diverse country in the world. They have over half of the spoken languages in the world.
Wow.
Are in Papua New Guinea. And so you have a country of 7 million people that has 841 spoken languages.
Oh, my.
And I'm not talking dialects. I'm talking different languages, you know. and so coming in, it's impossible to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every tribe has their own language, and it's impossible to learn all of these languages. English is one of the official languages of the country, but only the highly educated mm-hmm. can speak it with any degree of fluency. Most people can't speak it at all, even though it's one of the official languages. Most government business, for example, is conducted in English. Or much government business is conducted in English, but only the highly educated will be able to speak it. In addition to their individual tribal languages, most people learn Pidgin, Melanesian Pidgin, or Tok Pisin, and so that's the language that we first will need to be learning, and that's the language then that I will primarily be teaching in, for example. And so you have to get a degree of fluency in that before you can pretend to teach anything in it, and that, I think, is one of the things that we're, you know, most kind of focused on as far as you know, preparing ourselves to be able to live and interact over in Papua New Guinea.
So will the whole family be learning Pidgin then?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you right now that my four kids will probably be speaking it fluently in a matter of days or weeks, and Mom and I will be learning from the kids, you know, as far as that goes.
That's usually how it works. Kids are pretty good at languages.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it sounds like thank the Lord that he's sending you and not me to Papua New Guinea, because of all the challenges that I hear. No schedule, no strict schedule. And coming from someone who works in radio, where you follow a schedule to the second, that could be kind of challenging. And I've had other friends who have served in missionaries in other cultures, and I know that, you know, around the world not everybody sticks to a very strict schedule, and it's much like what you've described, where when we show up, that's when it happens.
And
so for someone who who's used to sticking to a pretty strict schedule, that sounds like it could be kind of challenging. And then so many languages, that's got to be frightening as well. How's the family feeling about all these challenges?
They're actually, for the most part, I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that we never have our moments of terror, never have our moments where we find ourselves thinking, dear Jesus, what in the world have you brought us into, and why did we agree to it? Certainly we have those moments, but mostly it's gratefulness for the blessing of God, for the calling of God, gratefulness for the opportunity. The kids are excited. The kids are looking forward to it. And on so many levels, I mean, they're excited to experience something so totally new. They're excited to have the opportunity to learn the language and to learn the culture. One of the former missionaries, when we sat and visited with them, brought out some Papua New Guinea money, and the kids carry that around with them, and they're so pleased to have it, and it's so exciting to them to be able to hold money from Papua New Guinea, and this is something that mostly they are absolutely looking forward to. They love the fact that we're going to be able to walk out into the backyard and pick star fruit off of the tree, or to have an avocado tree in the backyard. Oh my goodness, this is just the height of wonderfulness for these kids.
I'm not even a kid, and I would be excited about that.
Yeah, they're looking forward to that sort of thing, and they have their nerves. They have their moments of nerves, but mostly they're. Mostly, they're excited and looking forward to it. They've been trying to get, and the Fort Wayne Library System is one of the best in the country as far as what they have available, and they've been kind of selecting materials so that they can learn a little bit about the history and the culture of Papua New Guinea, and they're looking forward to that. We actually homeschool our kids here, and so they are able to focus certain areas of their studies on areas that they're particularly interested in, and Papua New Guinea is one of those areas now, mm-hmm. not surprisingly. It's kind of nice because then when we go over to Papua New Guinea, we'll be able to continue the homeschooling, which is in many ways less expensive than any other type of schooling option we can have. And then more than that for my wife and I, more than that is that the kids stay with us, that we don't have to send them to a boarding school or anything like that. And so the kids will be there with us, being homeschooled. And that part of their life will there'll be a little bit of difference, but certain materials, certain resources are a little harder to access when you're in the highlands of Papua New Guinea than they are when you're in the heart of the Midwest United States. But mostly their schooling is not going to change. Mostly their home life, other than location, is not going to be radically different in many ways than it is here. I mean, even the house we're going to live in, no mud hut. It's not a mud hut. It'll be a ranch style house that you could almost pick up and set down in the United States, and you wouldn't even realize it came from somewhere else, which is nice. So some of those amenities, some of those kind of luxuries or conveniences that we're used to here will be present there. Some of them are much less accessible and will take some getting used to. But again, the kids are pretty keen on giving this a try, and they're pretty excited about the opportunities that they have in front of them here.
So speaking of opportunities they're excited about, you mentioned volcanoes and machetes. How did that come up?
I actually don't remember the exact. I think it was Beth when the kid's initial reaction was, no, we don't want to go halfway around the world. And she just started talking about what Papua New Guinea was like. It's tropical jungle, but we're up high enough that we have to suffer through 50-degree nights and 75 to 80 degree days year round. You know, I mean, it's just kind of awful in that sense, you know. But, you know, she started talking about some of these kinds of things up in the mountains and things like that, and then mentioned the volcanoes, because if I remember correctly, Papua New Guinea has more active volcanoes than any other country in the world. It's kind of the heart of the Ring of Fire. And now, that sounds all kind of big and scary. To my knowledge, there are only 4 volcanoes that are right around where we're going to be, and 2 of those are believed extinct, and 2 of those are dormant and have been dormant for a couple of centuries. And so we're not going to have any real issues with that. The active ones that are currently erupting as we speak are mostly down on the coast and out in the islands. And so, you know, a few hundred miles from where we'll be. And so it's not going to be quite. But, man, it was just cool for those boys that we were going to be living in an area that actually had volcanoes where they could, you know, actually be on the slope of a real volcano, you know. And I mean, so it kind of came up just as we were talking about what it would be like over there. And they started hearing some of this stuff, and it kind of shifted their perspective. This wasn't simply a, you know, we're just going halfway around the world to some place where you're going to have to, you know, sit on the floor and stare at a corner all day. But no, actually, you're going to be able to run around. And a lot of the people over there carry machetes because you are in the jungle. And lo and behold, a lot of the children carry machetes. And my boys started wondering if they could maybe have machetes of their very own. And that was pretty cool, too, because who doesn't like a really big knife? Right. So, it kind of came about from that.
I cringed at the thought of it.
You know, they don't.
Yeah. Young boys with giant knives. That just sounds dangerous. Well, so you'll be in the, it sounds like you'll be in the Highlands, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Will you, while you're there, might you have opportunities to travel and see more of Papua New Guinea? I don't know much about it. How much is there to see, and what will you experience? Will you get to experience much beyond the area in which you live?
You know, certainly most of what we'll experience will be around the area that we live, but yes, absolutely. We'll be down on the coasts. You know, when we go on vacation, you know, we'll be able to travel wherever we want and can afford to go. Admittedly, that might not be as far as we would like, mm-hmm. but we will be able to travel. There are a couple of kind of guest houses that the Missouri Synod maintains down on the north coast of the main part of Papua New Guinea there. And a lot of times, you know, the missionaries in the past have traveled down there and stayed at you know, along the beach there. And then down in Port Moresby, some of the churches of the Good News Lutheran Church are down. Well, one of them is down in Port Moresby. And there will certainly be opportunity to go down there and to interact. We have to fly into Port Moresby, which is the capital of Papua New Guinea, down on the south part of the coast there. And so there will be opportunity to see, certainly to see other parts of the country. One of the difficulties becomes up in the highlands, you know, the easiest way in and out is by air. And so it does become relatively expensive to try traveling too much. But that will absolutely be a possibility, as will potentially being able to finally see Australia and parts of Australia, you know, as we travel and as we have opportunity to take a vacation and to travel for a week in Australia, which is exciting. So.
Wow, so lots of traveling. What a once in a lifetime opportunity for the kids, but also for the adults in the family
to get
to see all this.
Absolutely, and that's actually just speaking selfishly, that's actually one of the great perks,
sure,
if you will, of something like this, where we will be able to see areas of the world that, much as we would have liked to, we never would have had the opportunity to see, mm-hmm. apart from this, and now all of a sudden we will have the opportunity to see at least some of these things. You know, again, you're limited by finances, you know. Shockingly enough, we don't make seven-figure salaries or even six-figure salaries, you know, and so you're limited by your finances like everybody else is, but where your financial limitations in the United States keep you within 1,000 miles, for example, of your home when you travel, well, your financial limitations in Papua New Guinea keep you within 1,000 miles, but lo and behold, that includes Australia. You know, that includes the rest of Papua New Guinea. That includes all of these other areas of the world that we just never would have had an opportunity to see or to experience. And that, I think, is a wonderful benefit of this, or is a wonderful perk of something like this. You know, obviously it doesn't hold a candle to, you know, what's the whole point of going over there? The whole point of going over there is ministry of word and sacrament. And that is that is the most important thing. And if we were to go over there and have to live in a mud hut, and if we were to go over there and never be able to travel, it's still worth it for the ministry of word and sacrament.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
And so,
and I want to talk more about word and sacrament here in just a moment. I want to remind our listeners, if you have a question or a comment today, you're welcome to give us a call here in the studio at 314-821-0850 or outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727, or you can send an email to family@kfuo.org. And we do have one quick email, a little off topic, but one of our listeners heard, we're talking with Peter Haugen today and had a question. Any connection to the composer Marty Haugen? Any background there?
most likely not. I can't speak for sure, but most likely not. My family, I am Norwegian, and my family, we changed, thank you, Ellis Island, we changed our family name to Haugen when we moved to the United States. So we have only been Haugens for about four generations or so. And four or five generations. And so most Haugens were not related to at all. So I would hazard a guess that no, there is no connection there. But, you know, if he was a Nordvik, maybe, but probably no connection there.
All right. Well, speaking of you had mentioned Word and Sacrament ministry and the work that you're going there to do. Will you be connected with a local congregation? Will your family be able to worship with a local congregation? Will you be serving in the pulpit at any time while you're there?
Not in the sense, I will not be serving in the pulpit in the sense of being called as the pastor of a church.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we're called as missionaries. I'm, you know, we meaning my family, the Horns family, who's there now. But are called as missionaries. And in that sense, as we travel, as we visit, it is not uncommon, you know, for us to be asked, we missionaries to be asked to preach, for example, on a Sunday, to administer the sacraments, to baptize those who have come forward for baptism or who are bringing their infants forward for baptism, to commune those who come to the altar. That is not uncommon. That is a relatively frequent occurrence. Not having been there yet, not having started my ministry there yet, it's a little difficult to say. My suspicion is that we will be able to worship regularly at the local congregation in the town that we'll be living. We'll be living in Aurelia, which is where the governor of the province lives, and there is a GLC congregation there, and most likely that will be our home congregation, in the sense that will be our kind of primary congregation there, where we will go and we will worship. And how much preaching I will do there, how much assisting I will do there, how much administering, I'm not sure. I know there will be some, but I'm not sure exactly how much that will entail. So
you really have you're just packing up the whole family, moving your whole family life to the other side of the world. But as it sounds, as you've described, some things will change, some things won't. Obviously,
yep.
the address is going to change, but some of the things are going to stay the same. Your family's still going to continue with homeschooling, and so the kids
yep.
will still have the opportunity to continue on in their studies without much of a disruption in that. And
yep.
but still opportunities for them to learn about the local culture as well,
yep.
and chances for them to meet the local culture and experience that, and most importantly, the time that you'll invest in teaching the word there in the Bible schools and in the seminary.
And also, you know, the opportunity, our family devotional materials come with us, you know,
mm-hmm.
our ability to gather around the word as a family remains the same because our family is still there. And that's something that here in the United States, you know, I don't know about you or about your listeners, but in the United States, I know I often struggle with maintaining a regular family devotional life, because there's so much going on, because there are so many other opportunities. It so often seems to get forgotten or to get lost, and we struggle to bring it back, and we succeed sometimes and we fail sometimes. And yet the church here in the United States is central to our family life. And so even when we are failing to have family devotions, we regularly go to Matins. We regularly go to services at our local church, and that is a central facet of our lives. That won't change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be that going into the local congregation is a little bit less frequent than it is here, in the sense that we're blessed to have a church here that has daily matins, for example, and very likely that kind of frequency won't be available where we'll be, but certainly we'll be able to gather together ourselves around a family matins, you know, every day, and that kind of core centrality, keeping Christ centered in the family, solidifies your family better than an address, and solidifies your family better than proximity to things that you're used to, you know, and that travels with us when we go.
Well,
and that remains something that is core and central for the family.
Well said. That's what the heart of the show is all about. That what keeps the family together is the gifts of God. That's what strengthens our family. That's the heart of the family is the gifts of God and how He strengthens us. Before we go, we've got about a minute left here. I want to give listeners the opportunity to find out what your needs are and if there's any support needed that they might be able to provide.
Absolutely. We, you know, number one, absolutely most foundationally important for us is prayer support. To have people regularly and faithfully praying for us. You know, encouragement, financial support. We certainly need financial support. Missionaries today in the Missouri Synod are responsible for raising their own support networks, for raising their own funding, and so finances are important. The single most important thing that can be done is prayer. And I'll tell you, we actually have a website through the LCMS site that gives access to our prayer card, that gives giving opportunities if you're interested in giving financially, but certainly would give you a little bit of information about me, about my family, and about some of the needs and things that we're facing as we go over. If you don't mind that I give
sure.
it.
Sure, yeah, and we'll okay. post a link to it as well today.
Oh, fantastic. It's actually just www.lcms.org/Haugen, H-A-U-G-E-N, and that'll take you right to our page. There's a link on the left that gives you access to the prayer card. If you scroll down a little bit, there's a link that you can give straight online. It'll give you information about how to give other ways. And then on that page also is a picture of our family, and then is some information about who we are and what we're going to do.
Wonderful. And it's a great story and the excellent picture. I love the kids in the picture. It's great.
yeah, they're cute kids. Thank you, my wife. from whom they take their looks.
Well, thank you, Pastor Haugen, for spending some time with us today talking about your upcoming service in Papua New Guinea as missionaries. We're looking forward to keeping updated on what's going on with the Haugen family. So thanks for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
Certainly. God's blessings. We'll continue this week on Faith and Family with our discussions on missionary families serving abroad in a variety of international settings. So looking forward to continuing that discussion. Coming up next right here on Worldwide KFUO is Moments of Assurance. Stick around for great music.